Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. It's good to be back. If you were listening to Brian Noonan, you know I was on a trip for 2 weeks, and I'm back. I got back a couple of days ago, and I want to talk about my trip. I want to talk about traveling, and I want to hear maybe some of your stories about cruising, because that was a new experience for me. But I want to tell you a little bit about the show. After we talk about travel, we're going to talk, actually what I'm going to do at about 7:15, I'm going to ask for callers, and I'm going to do a little Baltic Sea trivia. It's some fun facts about the area in the Baltic Sea where I was, and we're going to play a game, and the winner will get a very valuable prize. Very valuable. And then in the 7:30 hour, we're going to be talking to Victor Cohen. Victor Cohen is a person who is involved with all things comedy. He spent about 26 years in California writing for Howie Mandel and Joan Rivers and many of the game shows, and he's here back in Chicago, and we're going to talk about writing comedy. How do people write comedy? How are you funny? How can you get up every day and be funny? I think that's a very, very interesting topic. But let's talk a little bit about travel. Let's talk about cruising. Let's talk about what it means to travel. I read a statistic that said that 36% of all Americans hold passports. And that's very low. When you compare it to the Brits and the Aussies, that statistic is about 75%. And what's interesting is that I think that Americans don't travel as much. I think it's harder for Americans to travel just because we're sort of isolated in a big ocean. And when you're in Europe, you obviously can travel a lot easier by train, and it's a lot closer to travel. I also think it's expensive. The statistics show that the average person who travels to Europe spends at least $2,700. And I think that's low when it comes to airfare and hotels and getting around. And also, I think Americans are hard workers. I think that Europeans, not that they're not hard workers, but I think they take off more time and they're able to take holiday for several weeks as opposed to maybe the 2 weeks that most Americans get from their job. And finally, the statistics show that a lot of Americans are still afraid to fly. They're still afraid to travel in foreign countries. They see that there's violence or terrorism, and they find that their home base is more secure for them, even though I think the statistics will show you that being in Chicago is probably more dangerous than being in almost any other European city. But that said, I'd like to talk a little bit about my trip, and I'm going to have my husband, Jerry, come on and talk about it with me. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
Are you on?
I don't know.
Yeah, you're on. Okay, so we go to Copenhagen, which is a beautiful, beautiful city, and we travel to Russia and to Berlin. You know, Jerry, what are some of your thoughts? What I was thinking the whole trip was, what is it like with the people that we've met in these different cities, and what is very different? And, you know, one of the things that we talked about was the young people. Young people are on their cell phones all the time. This is not an American situation. This is everywhere.
Yeah. We were, as a matter of fact, when we were in St. Petersburg, Russia, we're at the Hermitage, which has 3 million pieces of art, 1,000 rooms. We're walking from room to room, and the young people were, you know, checking to make sure that Kim Kardashian was alive and well.
Well, and obviously their parents have paid for them to come on this huge trip, and they're of age where they should find some of this interesting and enlightening and beautiful, and instead of that, they were very involved with their phones. And again, you know, that's just very disappointing. The other thing that I found interesting was tattoos. If we think that tattoos are prevalent here in this society, in where we traveled, I don't know that there was anybody that I saw with fewer than 6 or 7 tattoos. You know, the girl with the dragon tattoo, you know, this was like the dragon with the girl tattoo. I mean, it was like the whole body was taken up by tattoos. And the other thing that I think we both noticed was in these cities, again, you know, we have it good here in this country. We really, really do. But the other countries were very progressive when it came to certain things. Healthcare was good for most of these countries. Education was good and or free in many of these countries. Again, they pay taxes that support that. But they're very environmentally aware. I mean, bicycling, recycling is mandatory. I mean, everyone is very interested in preserving the environment, much more so than in our country. But everybody
smokes.
Did you notice that, right?
I mean, I
would say, and the statistics bear this out, that I think double the number of people smoke percentage-wise than they do in the United States. I don't know if that's because we tax cigarettes so heavily or we've had this campaign to try to get rid of underage smoking, but it was just it was kind of bad to see very young people in their 20s who were very healthy otherwise, puffing on cigarettes pretty much everywhere we went. The other thing that I think we noticed was the, especially in Russia. Russia was a place where you could tell that the government was not good to the people. The one thing that our tour guide, who is very intelligent, did say it's better. You know, we had the mafia, we had the mob. It's now moved to Moscow more than St. Petersburg. But at least now we can talk about the government. Before, if there was talk about the government, that was a problem. People would disappear. You know, and at least now they can talk about it. But again, the corruption was horrible. I asked them about, what's it like to be a lawyer? Is that a good job? And she said, yes, being a lawyer was a very good job. But it doesn't matter how good your lawyer is. It's a matter of who you are, how much money you have to bribe people, and how quickly you can get it done. And that was the way it was. Which of all the countries we went to, which one did you like the best, Jerry?
I think Sweden. First of all, the Swedish people are the nicest people in the world. They're incredible. The city itself is beautiful. It's based on 14 islands, all connected with tunnels and bridges. And I will say about these Scandinavian cities like Helsinki and Copenhagen, unbelievably clean. No litter anywhere. Every now and then you may see some graffiti. But the thing that I really loved was they all have like thousands of bicycle riders and they all obey the law.
Yeah.
They stop. They don't run through red lights. They're nice. They don't strange gestures at you.
It makes you understand that bicycles can work in a city as long as they obey the laws. Because in Chicago, I feel like when I drive, I feel like I'm going to kill somebody every half an hour.
Yeah,
so it's no, you're right. It was a very orderly bicycle society.
And nobody honks their horn.
Yeah.
You know, a couple days ago, I almost killed a guy on a bicycle running through an intersection. I'll get him next time.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to give us a call here. I'm going to take one caller, and we're going to do a Baltic Sea trivia question. Call me at 981-7200, 312-981-7200. Let's take the second caller. Ben, you'll take that second caller and get her on the phone or get him on the phone, and we'll do a little trivia question. Welcome back. It's the Karen Conti Show. What do you guys think of cruising? I want to hear from you. Do you like cruising? Is that something you like to do? Or would you rather just do it on your own? I was talking to Brian, if you may have heard. I was finding that cruising was a little bit not my style, just because I like to navigate myself. But there were some good parts about cruising as far as going to a number of cities and not having to unpack and doing those kinds of things. So give us a call here. I'd like to hear what you have to say about that. 981-7200. And right now we're going to do a little Baltic Sea trivia test. And I think we have a contestant on the line. Is this Jim?
Yes. Hello.
Hi, Jim. You're from Antioch?
Yes.
You are? Okay. Are you a cruiser in Antioch?
I'm not a cruiser, but I would love to do cruising in Europe. I'm sort of envious about that.
Yeah, it was a good trip. And I don't mean to be picky or ungrateful of going to a place like that, but if I had a different way of traveling and getting to see all those countries, I think I would prefer that. But anyway, are you ready for the Baltic Sea trivia questions?
Yes, indeed.
All right. So, the one of the towns that we went to was Copenhagen, which is in Denmark. What famous author was from Copenhagen?
I'm going to have to say the only one that I could think of is Hans Christian Andersen.
I was going to give you choices, but you got it. You absolutely got it. Hans Christian Andersen, did you read any of his books when you were a kid?
I'm sure I did. I couldn't tell you a certain title off the top of my head.
Well, Emperor's New Clothes.
Very famous Danish.
Ugly Duckling, Thumbelina, and the most famous one is The Little Mermaid. And when you go to Copenhagen, there is a lovely sculpture of a little mermaid sitting out on the rocks, and you go out there and you can take pictures with the mermaid, and it's very, very lovely. Hans Christian Andersen was an interesting guy. He wanted to be a ballerina when he was young, and he was a very awkward man, and he wanted to be known for writing adult novels. But the thing, of course, that he's most well known for now is writing all of those children's books, which have been well received over the years. So, all right. All right, here we go. All right, now this is going to entail a little musical interlude, and I'm going to tell you this is a song called Wonderful Copenhagen. It was sung by what singer in the movie called Hans Christian Andersen? Can you play that, Ben? All right, Jim, is anything ringing a bell here?
Do I get a choice on this? I don't need a choice this time either.
Go ahead. Tell me who you think it is.
Danny Kaye played it.
Oh, my gosh. Are you quickly Googling this? Come on,
no,
tell me the truth.
I just knew that from the movie.
Oh, so you saw the movie.
He played Hans Christian Andersen in the movie, yes.
Yes, he did. You're doing really well. You might just... actually, today is National Give Something Away Day. Did you know that? Yeah.
I'll take the whole prize closet.
There you go. All right, next one. I was in Stockholm. That was part of the trip. Stockholm is in Sweden. And I'm going to ask you a question, Jim. The Stockholm Syndrome is a condition that causes hostages to develop psychological allegiance with its captors, right? The origin of this syndrome was A, Patty Hearst abduction that was studied in Sweden, B, hostages in Stockholm were taken in a bank robbery, C, the famous psychologist was born in Stockholm who came up with the syndrome, D, there is no relation at all to Stockholm.
I'm going to have to say C.
No, I'm so sorry. It was B. The hostages were taken in a bank robbery in Stockholm. It was, just for your information, it was 1973. A convict who was out on parole tried unsuccessfully to rob a bank and took four employees and held them for about 6 days. And the hostages sort of aligned with the captor and basically didn't want to testify against the bank robber because they believed that he was in the right and the police were in the wrong. So very, very interesting. And, of course, that was used as a defense in the Patty Hearst case in the United States, which came later. Okay. All right. So you're still doing okay. 2 out of 3. Baltic Sea trivia. Here we go. Tallinn is the capital of Estonia. The development of what software product happened in Tallinn? Was it A, Skype, B, OnStar Technology, C, FaceTime, or D, Windows?
Okay, could you spell the name of the city so I can, if that's a clue?
Are you Googling?
Or it doesn't matter.
Are you Googling, Jim?
No.
Okay, no, I'm
No,
just
I'm
kidding.
Not. I'm...
We're on the honor system here. T-A-L-L-I-N. Maybe there might be two N's. There's two N's. Yeah, T-A-L-L-I-N-N. Okay?
Okay, and then
Skype?
One more time for the A, B, C, or D.
A is Skype, B, OnStar, C, FaceTime, or D, Windows?
I'm going to have to say OnStar.
It is Skype. And interestingly, in 2005, eBay acquired Skype for $2.6 billion. And then about 6 years later, Microsoft bought Skype for $8.5 billion. The company is now located in Luxembourg, but still, half of the employees are still in Tallinn, Estonia. Okay?
All right.
The Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, Russia, is the second largest art museum in the world. It occupies 6 buildings. If you spent, and I'll say this, Jerry already said we have 3 million pieces of artwork in the Hermitage, and only 20% of them are actually on display, an amazing amount of art. If you spent 1 minute in front of each painting, how long would you be in the Hermitage?
And we're counting for the whole $3 million then?
Yeah. So would it be,
okay,
would you be there for 2 years? Would you be there for 11 years? Would you be there for 25 years? Or would you be there for 50 years?
I'm going to say you're short. It's 2 years.
11 years. If you stood in front of each and every painting for 1 minute, you would be in the Hermitage for 11 years. All right. The Art Institute, I was looking at how big are the different art museums, and the Louvre is number one, and our art museum, our Art Institute, is number 10. So you can see how very, very large this art museum is. Okay. All right. To finish it off, that is a pun on the term and the word Finland. Helsinki, Finland was the site of the Olympics, which were first canceled, delaying the event for 12 years. So Helsinki was set to host the Olympics and was delayed for 12 years. What delayed the Olympics in Helsinki? You're going to probably
12 get years.
For 12 years.
12 years. It's World War II, I'm assuming.
That's exactly right. For World War II, they were supposed to be held in 1940. They were eventually held in 1952. Helsinki was the northernmost city in the world where the Olympics were hosted. And more records were broken in that Olympics until the 2008 Olympics in Beijing. Little fun fact. Jim, you did great. I'm going to give you a Karen Conti Show hat. It's a very valuable gift on National Give Something Away Day. Thanks for playing.
All right, will you sign it?
Absolutely, I'll sign it. All right, I'm going to put you on hold, and you're going to give Ben your address and all your information. Take care.
All righty.
All right,
thank you, Karen.
All right,
thanks for
listening. Hey, Ben, how long do we have? Do you have a few minutes? All right. Did anyone call in here about cruising? I want to talk a little bit about cruising. Jerry, did you like the cruise experience?
I loved the actual ship. It was crazy. They had like 25 restaurants, casinos, bowling alleys, theaters. It was in great talent everywhere. But with the crew, there were over 6,000 people on this boat. It was like being in a hotel in Las Vegas.
But a big hotel, like a
big
super
hotel.
Yeah. Right.
It's huge. It was absolutely beautiful. It was painted like a Peter Max thing, because they were featuring Peter Max in the art gallery. If you wanted to buy a $200,000 watch, you could do it right there on the ship. It was crazy. I probably would have opted to have less children. There are a lot of kids, and, you know, kids will be kids. So it could be a little crazy at times, because they could really run wild because the parents didn't have to worry about them disappearing.
Right. And again, it's not that we're children haters, but when you're having a nice dinner and you've got, you know, kids running around in wet bathing suits and screaming and yelling, and, you know, the parents are trying to have a good time. I frankly was surprised that this cruise, I mean, going to the sites that we did, that they would have children there, because who, you know, bringing a child to Helsinki or St. Petersburg, Russia, is kind of an unusual thing. But again, I think maybe at some point some of the parents stayed on the ship at some of the stops while the other family members may have, you know, taken the tours that were available.
I thought it was really funny when we were in St. Petersburg. You know, everything in Russia is vodka, or as they say, vodka. Everywhere. We went to lunch, they give you a complimentary shot of vodka. But I was teasing our bus driver, whose name was Vladimir, which is an excellent Russian name. I said, Vladimir, did you have your vodka today? So the bus driver, Vladimir, pulls out a whole bottle of vodka. He says, yes, of course, I had my vodka.
Nostrovia! I was doing my Russian accent. I was doing it very well. I was good doing it well. You have your caviar and your vodka. Anyway, we are going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Victor Cohen, who is a very interesting guy, who is going to talk about writing comedy and how we are funny when we write comedy. Welcome back. It's the Karen Conti Show. We are going to be taking your legal calls at 8 o'clock, as we normally do. We missed a couple of weeks while I was out of town. I hope we get back on the horse here. If you have any legal questions for me, I'm a practicing lawyer, I'll be happy to answer your questions or try to steer you in the right direction. And that number is 312-981-7200, 981-7200 at 8 o'clock. But First, we are going to be talking to my next guest. Victor Cohen is involved with everything having to do with comedy. He's an actor, a producer, an Emmy-nominated TV writer, and creator for talk shows, game shows, and he also writes for comedians such as Joan Rivers and Howie Mandel. Welcome to the show, Victor. How are you?
Thank you so much. It is so exciting to be here. And guys, if the people have never met you, you have some serious guns.
Oh.
Like your arms. I mean, you're ripped.
Well, it's
incredible.
About 20 years ago, I did a bodybuilding competition. It was my one and only, and I did it, and I'm done with it, and I still do work out. And
yeah, I mean, you don't have an ounce of fat. I mean, you're in great shape.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
How'd you do in the competition?
I took second in the state.
Wow, that's pretty good.
At age 36, I was proud of myself.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to do that kind of competition when you're working. You know, a lot of it takes good 8-10 hours a day of working out and dieting and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, and unfortunately, I have a day job. So,
yeah. Oh, one more thing I got to say. I love your opening your segment. Welcome back on your trip. It sounded like really a lot of fun.
It was great.
And you said 36% of Americans have passports.
Right.
And the reason I think this is because we don't need passports with Google. You know, you just put in Helsinki.
Yeah, right.
And you're there.
That's right.
It's like, I don't.
It's like having a ViewMaster.
It's great.
Is that what you call those things? Remember that when you were a kid?
Oh no, I don't know anything about.
Yeah, right.
I'm way too young for that.
You know those things that had like a wheel and you'd see like the Grand Canyon.
Oh yeah, it was like totally crazy that thing was even a popular toy.
Well, my mother used to say, "We don't have to see the Grand Canyon; you just saw it."
That was the Google back then.
That's right.
Sadly. That's
sadly
how bad it was. Oh, and I brought you a gift.
You did? What is it? Oh, my gosh.
It's wrapped.
Why did you even wrap it? It looks like...
take a guess.
Okay. It looks like a salad.
No, here's the clue.
Here's the clue.
My mom always said when you're a guest...
Yes.
You must bring a gift. So it has something to do with...
I'm going to let Jerry
This has something
it.
To do with my mom.
Okay.
Now, the paper is tough to unwrap because it's actually a bag.
Okay.
I went to Walgreens downtown here, and this cracked me up. I go in there and I'm buying a bag, and then she rings me up, and the woman there, she says, "Do you need a bag with that?" Like, she was going to sell me a bag for my bag.
Oh.
That's how automatic it is here with them. I think that's where they're making all their money.
Okay. Well,
on the bags.
Do you buy the bag when they ask you? Today I went and I bought groceries, and I said to myself, I'll be darned if I'm going to pay for a bag. So I walked home with like an armful of groceries like an idiot just because
I
didn't want to pay.
You.
What is it? Like, how much?
It's 7 cents. It's crazy.
Oh my gosh. Are these biscottis?
Those, this is the Jewish version of biscotti. This is mandelbread.
Okay.
And mandelbread is very Jewish. My mom is amazing at making mandelbread.
This looks really good.
It's great dunking in coffee or anything else you want to dunk in.
You're trying to sabotage my guns, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I know.
Well, I will share them with everyone.
And there are chocolate chip ones in there.
Oh, man.
And then there are other ones that are just nut. The nut ones are really more traditional. I love the ones with the chocolate. So my mom, I'm going to tell you something. This is like holy stuff. And then giving you.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I moved back from Los Angeles was for the mandelbread.
Well, I want to get to that. I want to talk a little bit about you first, though. You have done so many different things. First of all, you are basically raised in Chicago. You got your master's degree in journalism from Northwestern. You have been a TV reporter, a film critic. You've done stand-up at Caesar's Palace. You've had series. You've been acted on regular television shows. You were in the Versace American Crime Story, on Mobbed, A-List, Deal With It. You write for game shows. You do a lot of things, and you spend all this time in California. Now you're back in Chicago. We're going to talk about that. But I want to talk first about my favorite topic, which is game shows.
Okay. I love game shows.
I love game shows.
Yeah.
I grew up on all the Password and Hollywood Squares and $10,000 Pyramid or $100,000 Pyramid, whatever it was called.
No, back then it was $100
Pyramid. Well, yeah, that's right.
No, you're not that old.
Inflation just takes care of
that. Just kidding. I'm totally kidding.
Game shows making a comeback, do you think?
Well, I think that we've been seeing it for a pretty long time. And they've come back in all kinds of forms because really, The Bachelor is a game show.
That's
The Bachelorette
true.
Is a game show. So we've been seeing it for a long time. I think reality TV kind of brought in the game show. Big Brother is really a game show drawn out. But our traditional studio game shows, we've definitely been seeing a resurgence of it. As you know, I don't know if you mentioned, but I was the writer for Deal or No Deal. So I was writing for Howie, the host.
Howie Mandel.
And Howie Mandel. And that show is actually going to be coming back on CNBC. It was gone for a while in reruns. I believe it was on the Game Show Network.
Well, so let's get into this a little bit of detail. So when you say you write for the show, you are trying to make everyone funny, and you're trying to make everyone entertaining, correct? So you're feeding lines to Howie Mandel. You're feeding lines to the contestants as well?
Well, here's how it works. So,
and feeding, maybe that's the wrong word.
Yeah. I was not feeding anyone.
Okay.
But yeah, basically the way it works is everything that happens game-wise is totally unscripted. So we never script the result.
Sure.
And that's real important to mention, because when I've said I've written on game shows, people get confused and they say, well, what are you writing? And then they'll say, oh, I knew it was fixed. That's not what I'm writing. So because of the game show scandals of like the 50s or whatever, they are today still feeling the effects of that in the game show world. On a game show, there is someone, an outside firm that's hired from, they call it SNC, the letter S and then ampersand C, and that stands for Standards and Compliance. And they will hire attorneys. There are law firms that specialize in overseeing, they're a third party, and they're overseeing the show. And because
I'd like this job.
Yeah.
Could you get me hired?
If you'd be interested, but I think you're doing too well here in Chicago. I don't think you want to give this up.
Game show lawyer.
It sounds fun, but it's
very interesting.
Yeah. So when there are rulings during the show, the lawyers can get involved.
So now, like if someone has an answer that's not quite right, but it's sort of right, that they might come in and make that decision.
Yes, it has happened many times. Now, we don't include that in the edits because it would be very dry and boring.
Of course.
But yeah, that is a very big part of the show. So as a writer, what I would be doing is there are intros and outros, like when you're going to break, that stuff needs to be written. And then also on Deal or No Deal, if you remember the show, for those of you listening, Karen and Jerry, he's still here with us, Karen's husband. So the way the show would work is it was produced in the sense we would have surprise guests that were connected to the player. Like maybe we flew in the lady's mother from India to, you know, so a lot of that I was involved with as well. Or we had a banker and he would provide kind of often joke like offers. Like there was a heavy set guy and once and the banker offered, he said something like if he'll give him X amount of money and the car, there was a car we put on stage if he could get in the car. And it was a tiny little sports car. And the banker was always the mean guy. So that would be written. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, what I want to talk about after we have our break, I want to talk about how you go about writing, because my idea of comedy writing, I remember the Dick Van Dyke Show, right?
Yeah.
Was that what it called? The Dick Van Dyke Show?
Yeah.
Where he was a comedy writer, and they'd sit around a table, and they'd come up with comedy ideas. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that, but we don't have time to finish that. I do want to ask you, you worked with Kylie Jenner, and how did you come to work with
her?
So
there was a show, I believe it was on TBS or True TV, but I think it was TBS. It was called Deal With It. And it's a format, a game show where people would show up at a restaurant and the whole game show would happen in a restaurant on location. And then celebrities would talk to one person in an earpiece to like a person who came in, and then to have them try and do things and with the guest who had no idea. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like if you and Jerry went in, we'd pull you aside, Karen, and we'd take you in the back and say, hey, do you want to be on a game show? Well, all you have to do is listen to this little earpiece in your ear, and this celebrity is going to tell you what to do. And the more things you do without telling Jerry that you're on a show, the more money you're going to make.
I never saw that.
Yeah, it was an Israeli format, and it's been all over the world, and it happened to be what we were doing here in LA shooting.
So Kylie was one of the...
So she was one of the celebrities, and she was fantastic. You know, she's... Now, this was 4 years ago or 5 years ago, and she's been in the news now because, you know, they're saying she's like the first self-made billionaire.
Billionaire. Can you even believe that?
Yeah, and the thing that struck me is when I saw her then, she was kind of just your typical kind of, I don't say like quirky, but kind of like going through that change where you're not like
pre-plastic surgery.
Yeah,
is like, that what you're saying?
I don't want... Yes, exactly. You know, I mean, the Kylie that I've seen lately, she's got a different chin, a different, you know, cheeks. She's got lips.
Different curves,
and,
yeah.
Oh, well. And I mean, she looks gorgeous, I think whatever she's earned, I mean, she's really actually had to work for it in some ways.
We're talking to Victor Cohen on WGN. When we come back, we're going to be talking about writing comedy. How do you write something funny? Your legal calls at 8 o'clock. The number is 312-981-7200. If you have a legal question of any type or you want to talk about a current event, I've kind of been out of the news for 2 weeks, so hopefully I'll be able to keep up with you, but happy to take your calls. And getting back to our guest, we have Victor Cohen here, who is a comedy writer, an actor, a producer. He's done all kinds of different things. And now, Victor, what I really want to talk about is how do you write comedy? How do you approach something to make everyone look smart? And I want to give you an example, because I think maybe like I'm doing a television show, okay? The Karen Conti television show. Which
And I'm a big fan of it.
Okay. I'm already a big fan of it. I don't even have it.
All right.
So I'm going to do a show, and I'm going to interview Stormy Daniels. And okay. I heard, and I didn't hear the whole story, but apparently she was arrested this past week.
It's been stormy for
touching someone at a strip club. The
charges were dropped.
Oh, they were dropped. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So let's just say that Stormy's going to come on my show, and I'm going to interview her, and this is a light segment, so I'm not doing the heavy hitting, 60-minute interview. But I'm trying to make us all look fun and lively and intelligent and entertaining. How do you approach this job to write for me?
Right. Well, the first thing is you're an attorney. So what I like to do is look at the person, their personality, and what makes them different. So what makes you different, I think, is that you're not only funny, witty, and what makes you different is you have that great legal background. So that's a perfect, we could get into some legal questions that other people who are hosting probably, it wouldn't be as right in their ballpark, if that
right.
makes sense.
Yes.
So, you know, things like asking her if, you know, there was just a report that Stormy might be getting a divorce. Well, guess who happens to be a family attorney? You know, and
right.
that's a great way to play off your personality and what you do versus if someone else were hosting the show and asking questions who weren't an attorney, they couldn't ask that question.
Got it.
And I also think that I'm curious what's going on with her attorney and herself. Like, I feel like there's some heat there.
Oh, you do?
I do. And I think that if she's getting a divorce, if it's true, it's a rumor, I believe, at this point. But if it's true, I want to know a little bit about that. So it really depends also on the take that you want to, you know, we would talk about this way ahead of time. Are you wanting to take some chances with some kind of news-making questions that could actually become news? Or
right.
do you want to not go there and play nice and just make the person feel good? Because, you know, I would be accommodating you however you want to go.
So let me just ask you, if people who write for the Jay Leno's and the Lettermans and the Conans, are those people basically writing some of their material, and do they have pre-planned jokes and questions that they're going to ask the guests? My answer, your answer is probably yes.
Well, yeah, the questions are generally pre-planned. A lot of times those questions aren't written necessarily from a comedy writer. They're written by the producer, because most guests are assigned producers who do all the background information. They do all the interviewing ahead of time. And from those pre-interviews, the questions then are prepared for the host in usually like a pre-show meeting.
Are you always able to be funny? Like, it seems to me like, for instance, I like to write, but I'm not always in the mood to write. I sometimes sit down, I have my cup of coffee, and I want to write, and it just doesn't happen. You know, doesn't happen. But sometimes I do, and it's sort of a come-and-go thing. Being funny, is that something that is, you have a certain time of day that you need to do it, you need to sit in a quiet room? What
3:05 p.m. to 3:07 is my funny time.
Is it?
No. No. You know what it is? I think what it is, Karen, really, I think that the funny, for me, happens in real life, like in conversation. Like if you and I were hanging out with your husband and we were just wherever, and if I just in the moment said something that made you guys laugh, I would write it down.
Yes.
So I like that kind of writing because it's organic and it's also
spontaneous.
Yeah. And like when I'm with you guys, I'm going to have, I have that extra motivation because it's fun to make people laugh and it'd be fun to make you guys laugh.
Well, it, as you know, and many of my listeners know, my father was a professional stand-up comic. So growing up with him, I saw how he did it. He was always looking for the laugh. Mm-hmm. He was always looking, not, you know, not an, in an appropriate setting.
Sure.
But he was always thinking of the pun. He was anticipating what the punchline is. And he didn't always do it. It wasn't always funny, but he took that chance. And as a result, he was very good at that kind of thing.
Right. I always say, you know, if a joke doesn't land, I just go, hey, you know, they're not all going to be winners.
That's right. That's right.
And that can get a laugh, too.
That's,
you know?
Absolutely.
There's always
right.
a way to handle it. Or like, I like when things go bad, because I think when they're bad, that's even more of a fun time to work off the reality of the bad. Not necessarily a joke not working, but like if I were to ask a girl, a woman, like out, you know, let's say, because I'm single, you know, and she said, oh, well, my husband, you know, I'm married. You know, let's say she didn't have a ring on, and I wouldn't have known. And I said, well, let's invite him. You know?
Right.
I love group just hanging out. You know, nothing. I don't get dirty or anything. But, you know, because it's like, instead of being like, oh, my God, I just asked someone who's married.
So you're single.
Yeah.
I don't know any single men. This is good.
Wait, I'm
gonna
straight.
I'm going to be able to.
Are you mean to fix me? I'm looking for a woman.
I'm going to fix you up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you believe me, I am very open that I'm new to Chicago. I mean, even though, like you said, I grew up in the northern suburbs, now I live downtown. I am totally geographically desirable. I will travel. I am very good with the red line and the brown line. I have not made it to the pink line. But I would love to find a reason to hit the pink line.
Now, this is something that I heard from a study that was done about men and women, difference between men and women and what they're looking for. The study said that women want a man who's going to make them laugh.
Oh, good.
And a man wants a woman who's going to laugh at his jokes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Two totally different things that sort of coincide, which is good. You want to make someone laugh, and women like to have someone make them laugh. If you're being a comedy writer and being a comedic actor, do you want a woman who makes you laugh, or do you want to make her laugh?
You know what? I just want someone who's real.
Yeah.
It's like, it's nice if they get the joke. I mean, that's always like a kind of a turn on. And if they happen to be very witty in the moment, that's always a turn on too. But I think what I like the most is just someone who's really warm and sincere. And, you know, even though I work and have worked a lot in the comedy world, I'm actually a very serious person.
Right.
So, you know, I am not that person who's constantly on, you know, where the on switch and it's like, oh my God, who put a quarter in him? Like, I don't want to be that guy.
You know, to that point, there's some idea that comedians and people who are involved in comedy are dark. And you see some of the people who have drug overdosed or depressed or committed suicide, and you see a lot of them in the comedic world.
Yeah.
Is that something that is prevalent? Is that something that's necessary in order to be funny, that you have to have this dark side?
Well, you know, I think that part of the problem doing stand-up comedy, and also just the entertainment business in general, is there's a lot of downtime. And so there's a lot of isolation. And you know that saying is the devil's workshop?
Oh, right. Yeah, idle mind or something.
Idle time is the devil's workshop. I think that there's something to that. Also, a lot of comics get off on the adrenaline rush of performing, and it's kind of an addiction.
Sure.
And I think that's why oftentimes there are cross addictions or multiple addictions. And then that's how they get into the drugs and the drinking and
do you also think that, like in my profession, if I lose a case, I take that hard, but I can also say that the law and the facts sometimes are not with me. I did my best and I just didn't convince the judge or the jury, and I don't take it personally. I try not to, and it's in, I can do that, at least at mm-hmm. this point in my career after doing it for so many years. But as a comedian, when you get up there and let's just say you're on the stage and you're not doing well, that's a personal issue. That I would take that personally. They didn't like me, or
right.
my joke didn't go over, or, you know, is that
well, full disclosure, I am in therapy twice a week.
Now, you don't want to tell the dating websites that, do you?
You know what? Actually, I'm kind of joking. It depends on the week. But I don't have that on my website. You know, no, I don't have that. I only share that with you, Karen, because I know you'll keep it private.
And the three listeners tonight.
No.
You and the three listeners,
there are a lot more
right?
than that. There's my mom, my dad. I've got two brothers and your family, and Jerry's here. And we've got Ben in the control room. So, I mean,
but we'll all keep this quiet.
Yeah, please. No one. You know what? I think the therapy is awesome, and I'm not ashamed of it. I love it. I think it's so helpful, and it would have been another career for me, actually.
Do you consider this therapy, what we're doing right now?
I love it because we're being honest and vulnerable a bit, although, I mean, I'm the one being vulnerable a bit. How, have you ever been to a therapist?
I have not been to a therapist.
Well, maybe.
And I'm not proud of that at all, because I think everyone could use therapy. I really do.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, and I need it. I mean, like, you know, I'm going through a huge transition, not that I'm, like, bouncing off of walls, but, you know, I did live in L.A. for 26 years. That's like having car insurance out there. You have to have a therapist.
The perfect plastic surgeon and everything else. Yeah. Victor, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And I'm going to give you, as a parting gift, because on game shows, you always have to have a parting gift.
Oh, my God. You brought me something.
I brought you on National Give Something Away Day, a Karen Conti WGN radio hat.
Oh, my God. This is so cool.
So wear it in good health. Victor Cohen, thank you so much for joining me.
I love this. KC.
And when we come back, we're going to be taking your legal calls. Oh, welcome back. I'm back after 2 weeks of vacation. I'm ready, though. You know, after 2 weeks, I'm ready to get my life in order. I'm ready to unpack and do my laundry and get ready to work and get back in the routine. It's kind of nice to have that feeling, because we all seem like we want to get away and we want to do something else. And then at a certain point, you want to get back to the life you have, which is a good thing. And another good thing is I'm taking your legal calls right now, as I usually do in the 8 o'clock hour. As many of you know, I'm a practicing lawyer. I've been doing it for 31 years, and I can answer your question or I can help you at least steer you in the right direction. The number here is 312-981-7200. You'll be talking to my producer, Ben. If you could just tell him your legal question, what it entails, what you're looking for as quickly as you can and concisely as you can, that would be great, and we'll put you on the air. If for some reason you don't want to have 50,000 listeners listening to your legal question, you can always call me at my office. I'm happy to take your call and steer you in the right direction. The number there is 312-332-7800, and it's even better if you email me, because then you can give me all your information. You can tell me where you live. You can tell me what it is, what happened, when it happened, and what you expect or what guidance you'd like. And that email address is wgn@askkarenconti.com. That's Ask Karen, K-A-R-E-N, Conti, C-O-N-T-I, .com. And you know what? There's a thing called a callback, and that is we're calling back Victor Cohen. He was on his way out, and
I was on the L.
You were not.
I was on the L. I got a frantic call from Jerry. I was 2 feet away.
I just thought, you know, in the interim, we're still taking legal calls, but in the interim, while we're loading up the phones here, hopefully everyone will be calling. You told me on the way out that you had a legal question.
I have two.
You got two.
Yes. I thought of another one. The first one is, when I'm walking down, like all the side streets here, literally downtown, I purposely walk on the grates, like those grated, because I'm hoping I fall through so I can sue the city. Now, if, God forbid, I were to fall through, have I just ruined my case by saying I hope to fall through?
It does ruin your case a little bit, because then...
Okay, so I should stop.
Because there's
talking.
This idea of being that you're contributorily negligent, because you really assumed that you might fall through.
Yeah, I have.
No, not really.
Is this a bad idea?
You know, is everyone out there really afraid of that?
Everyone avoids it.
I am so afraid. Yeah, well, some women do, because you're wearing heels. No, you're wearing heels. You put that right through the grates and you ruin your shoes.
Well, you know what else? Women wearing, I've heard this, that there are like really disgusting, sick men who work, they like find their way under the grates and they look straight up.
Oh, come on.
No, I made that up.
But there's
an urban legend.
You totally made
that
up.
I just made that up.
But the smell is
pretty
bad
good.
Too, because people use that as a bathroom.
But,
yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh,
I
yeah.
No, oh,
yeah.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. It's horrible.
This is really not
State
a,
Street.
It's not a great topic.
No, but State, oh, hey, nice.
Who's the comedian
that.
Here?
How'd you do that? I should be interviewing you.
And I'm always looking for the
That
joke.
Was good. You got that. And then the other thing is, actually, this is crazy. Like in Los Angeles, you know, jaywalking is a crime. And here, it's a sport. Have you ever even heard of anyone getting a jaywalking ticket in
the
city?
No, and this is interesting because almost everywhere in the world, crossing against the light is a problem, and people obey the lights. I was in Portland, Oregon on business, and I got a ticket for jaywalking because if there's no cars coming, you walk, right?
Right, out here.
I mean, you look both ways and you just cross, and they don't do that there.
Yeah, which means either they, like, the it means that there must be some maybe bigger crimes here. They've kind of...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so, it's... No,
I'm not
right.
used to it, but I'm loving it. I'm loving this jaywalk thing.
How did you like living in L.A.?
Well, I love the idea of just having certain opportunities that were unique to living in Los Angeles for work stuff.
Well, in your business, you know, you have to be there.
But I'm so thrilled to be back.
Yeah.
You know, I really feel the love here. That was my theme. Someone said, I heard someone in Los Angeles say they were going where the love is. And so I usually don't make decisions based on themes, like in my life. I don't have themes, but I did in this case. I was going where the love is. So my family, you know, parents, brothers, nieces, nephews, they're all here, sisters-in-law. This is Karen.
Yes.
New love, Jerry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, I have to say, when I was young, I wanted to live in California. I always enjoyed visiting there. I like the sunshine. I like the weather. I like the free spirit. I like the beauty. I took the bar there. I passed it. I had some clients there. I did some business
and there's
there.
Muscle Beach.
There's
you could
Muscle
work
Beach.
Out.
I could be on Venice. In Venice. Yeah, I could lift, be lifting.
I totally see you out there.
And eating all the good, healthy food out there. But, you know, I have to say, there's two types of people in the world. People who will move for weather and people who will not.
Well, I
will not move for weather.
Let me tell you about the weather, first of all.
Yeah.
I moved December 31st on purpose from Los Angeles. And I did it because I truly wanted to experience Chicago. And these people who complain about the weather, I'm going to defend weather for a minute.
Okay.
It's not the weather's fault. Like, if you have a problem in the winter with weather, it's your problem. Like, you don't have enough warm gear. That is the problem. The weather's just being the weather. Are you with me on this?
Well, I don't know about that. Because if you have to put on 16,
good point.
If you have to put on 16 things to just walk out the door, that there's something wrong with that. Like, okay, this is funny. We were in Russia, and I was asking about the weather because they have notorious bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
And our tour guide said, this is what we say in St. Petersburg. We say, for 9 months, we look forward to the summer, and then for 3 months, we are disappointed. So that they had 5 days last year of sun.
Wow.
5 days. So
that's not good.
That could bring you down. I get it.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. I think like the seasons, like out there, it's nothing.
Okay.
You don't really have seasons. Here, it's incredible. I mean, it really is. I know I'm sounding like a tree hugger and Mother Nature-ish kind of maybe over the top here, but it really is a miracle. Like, it was frozen here. I mean, that's crazy.
But
now it's warm. I know that you guys take it for granted.
So take away the weather, because let's just say that's not an issue. And maybe I do like the sun, and maybe I wouldn't miss the seasons. But you know what I miss when I'm out there is the connectedness. People in the Midwest are very connected. Like, for instance, I'm sure that if we spoke, Victor, I know people that you know, that you went to Glenbrook or
Glenbrook South.
Glenbrook South. I'm sure we have friends.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Morton West in Berwyn.
Okay.
But I know people who went there, and I probably named three people, and you know one of them.
Right.
And we all want to get together after work to meet for a drink or meet for lunch. And in California, people, I remember doing business out there, and I'd say, hey, you guys want to catch lunch together? And they're like, hey, no, we're windsurfing at lunch, so we can't do it. You know, it's like,
oh, yeah.
It's like, don't you want to be with me? No, I want to go windsurfing.
There are people who won't, like single people who live, it's got like west of the 405 freeway, which is the freeway that goes to the airport.
Okay.
And they won't date people who are east of that. You know, like, and it's only, I mean, they're really limiting themselves to about a mile or a couple miles.
Wait, I don't understand. Why?
Like, it'd be like, because they say it's too long a drive. I'd go anywhere. I went to Australia for a date from Los Angeles. I swear to you, it's a true story. I met this woman online. Of course. She lied to me about a few things.
You liked her accent.
I didn't even know her. She wasn't writing in it.
So you were...
I didn't know, like, I didn't really know about the accent till later. And then we did, I mean, I guess I knew because she was in Australia, but I didn't hear it till later.
She lied to you. How do you start a relationship when you know some woman is lying to you about herself?
At least she was honest about her lies. And she was really cute.
Yeah.
She was really cute.
So she said...
She said she lived in Beverly Hills. She didn't. And then when I found out she did live in Beverly Hills, when she was living there, she was actually living in a closet. She was renting a closet in a house in Beverly Hills.
But at least she came out of the closet.
Hey!
Hey! We're talking to Victor Cohen, but I'm still taking your legal calls. No one's calling me. You guys have to have some legal questions and give us a call here, 981-7200. 981-7200. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. But no one's calling in, so we're going to keep talking to Victor Cohen until you guys start calling in. That's 981-7200, any legal question you might have. Victor is a comedy writer. He's an actor. He writes for game shows. You've been in, of all the things that you've done, you've been a journalist, you've been a film critic. What is your, if you had to pick one of those things and do it for the rest of your life, which one would it be?
I had a podcast that I'm hoping to get started again soon now that I've moved to Los Angeles. For me, this kind of thing is my favorite thing.
Radio.
I love being in the moment like this. This conversation is really fun. And
You know, radio is fun. And you've done television and you understand that medium. But television is so soundbite-ish so that when I'm doing interviews, when people are interviewing me about a legal topic, I have such a tiny little bit of time to get out what I want to say, and I don't get a chance to explain or to listen or to talk in a way that's natural.
You know, because, oh, that totally makes sense.
Because you have to look good, you have to look a certain way, you have to get it in 3 seconds, and there's no ability to interact, really.
I want to ask you a quick question. So earlier, if just joined us, Karen and her husband were talking about their cruise. It was like a 4 month cruise or something.
No, it was like $100,000
cruise,
but sort of like 4 months. Yeah.
And they were complaining. You were complaining about a few kids.
See, that was snotty, wasn't it?
I'm just kidding you. I know exactly what you're talking about. When you're going away, you spend a lot of money, and going far away, you're not on a Disney cruise. Right? I mean, if you're on a Disney cruise, it's a different thing.
Well, and it's when it's your kids, it's a whole other thing.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
That's so true.
I have nephews, and I've been out with my nephews, and I really enjoy their antics. But when it's someone else's kids, it's a different story.
I totally agree. Yeah. And that goes for anywhere. Doesn't have to be a cruise.
That's true.
So I'm just curious, were you afraid of, like, falling off the ship, because this has become the new thing? You know, there's a guy who, I guess he worked on the ship, who fell off. He was swimming, treading water for like a day. And another cruise line happened to just find him in the water.
Is that really true?
Yes. It was about 20 some miles or so, roughly, I'm guessing, off the Cuban coast. And, he fell. It was night. There's actually video. This is crazy.
Oh, my gosh. That's like your worst nightmare.
Can I just tell you guys? There is video on YouTube. It should still be there. I saw it like a week or two ago, of the guy literally hanging on and falling into the ocean.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, you know, it's such a big ship. It's like more like a hotel on steroids.
It's crazy.
You don't even think of it. You almost think it like the water is just a videotape. But yeah, I mean, Jerry said that it would be quite easy to throw me overboard. He said that. And
That's what every woman wants to hear.
Because he always says he says that I always go overboard anyway. So,
okay.
All right.
Good.
So now we're going to switch to the very serious part of my show, where I'm going to take some legal calls.
Right.
All right. So I'm going to take, let's go to Joe. Hi, Joe, welcome to my show. You have a legal question.
Hi, Karen. It's good to hear you back.
Thank you.
It's really funny. My wife has been planning our European trip literally this week, and she was planning on going to Copenhagen.
Oh.
And it was just interesting to hear, but that's not why I'm calling.
Okay.
It was just nice to hear your feedback on
that. I'm glad you're going there, and I highly recommend all of those cities in the Baltic. They're all lovely.
I talked to you once before about this. But Tuesday, we're actually going to meet our attorney. We're setting up our trust. My question is, we're splitting our trust 50-50. 50% to the charity that I believe in, which is a good charity, and 50% to what my wife believes in, which is also a good charity.
Okay.
My question is, if one of us passes, does the other one... does it go to 100% to their charity? For example, if I want my half to go to the XYZ charity and I die, does my wife get to decide what happens Do you understand what I'm asking?
No, I understand. And this is, you know, this is something that you're going to obviously talk to your estate planning lawyer. This is what we call lawyers who do this. This is not in my area of expertise. But generally speaking, you can do with, say you predecease her and you want that money to go. You can say that money goes immediately. However, if you say money goes to your wife and then when she dies, she's forced to give it to your charity, that's something that I don't think you can do. Do you understand that?
Okay.
So your wife might say to you, Joe, if you die first, what if I live to 102 and I need all of this money to,
that's
help
me out? That's kind of what I was thinking about,
So please don't give the money to charity now because I might need it to live on, in which case then she would then, when she passes away, she would have the right to do with that money as she pleases. So I don't think you can do a posthumous, I want that money to go somewhere else after it's in her possession. Once it's left to her, she's going to get to do
it.
It's her
decision.
And she can change her mind.
Dehydration.
Exactly. Thanks, Karen.
All right. Take care.
Tools.
Getting to Yes Aunt, a fan of Taste of Chicago.
What is going on here? All right. 100 events, 19 days. Ben, do you hear that?
Food
festival. Am I hearing voices
Visit
again?
CT
is this happening again? Anyway, let's go to Paul. Hi, Paul. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, Karen. I've been listening to you for many years.
Oh.
First-time caller.
Nice to hear you.
My question is, years ago, my wife and I took out wills, and then recently we had a trust made. Now, my question is, does the trust cancel out the wills? They run together, negate one or the other?
I'm not sure exactly what your plan is, but generally speaking, there's all different ways to do this. And again, this is going to be very specific to your situation. A very typical situation is that you have a trust. And again, a trust is something, it's a fictional kind of entity where you put all your money and you put all your assets into that barrel, if you will.
Sure.
And when you die, the barrel gets disseminated and gets distributed in a way that you have specified. And there's a trustee that's in charge of that. And then you have what they call a pour-over will, which when there's extraneous things that maybe weren't put into that trust and maybe you didn't get around to putting them into that trust, meaning you didn't put that bank account in the name of the trust, you didn't put the house in the name of the trust, then that money will be distributed according to a will. So it's sort of like a safety net. That's how I look at it. So again, not knowing what your paperwork says, it would be a very typical thing to have both of those tools in your estate plan.
In other words, I should get out those wills and look at and see if there's anything in there that did not automatically go into the trust.
And yes, and just so you know, your estate planning lawyer should have told you, here are the following things you need to do, and that you might have to retitle your house, you might have to retitle some bank accounts, you might have to do certain things, and if you don't do that, then that trust is going to be no good. And that's a warning for everyone out there. Listen to your estate planning lawyer. When that is done and you walk out of there, you need to know what you need to do to make sure that all of those things happen the way they're supposed to happen. The other thing, Paul, that I would recommend is, I don't know, how many years has it been since you've had your estate plan done?
Well, we just made a couple amendments to it because we're going over it a year and a half. And then we noticed some things we didn't like, so we sent it back and they made the revisions.
Okay. Well, good. And I guess I was going to say, if it's been any longer than that, you might want to have some lawyer look at it and update it. But it sounds like yours are pretty recent. And a lot of people do their will and maybe 10 years later, that's a point in time where you might want to have a lawyer look at it. Tax laws change. You might have different specifications that you want. There might be different changes in the law that allow you to do certain things. Always a good idea to spend a little money and have it updated to make sure that that it's as good as you're going to get and you're going to save as much money as possible and do with your money as you wish. Thanks for the call so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Let's go to Warren. Hi, Warren. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. Do you have a legal question? Hi.
Yes, I do, Karen. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I work for about a 600-person corporation.
Okay.
On March 13th, I had a shoulder replacement surgery done. They allowed me my family FMLA, my family medical leave. To return to work, I have to pass a physical evaluation, which right now is physically impossible for me to do.
Okay.
As of the 19th of July, they won't let me come back to work without passing the physical examination. Now, the company that issues the test, their tester told me not to even come in until I'm 5 months post-op. As of the 19th of July, I'll be like 4 months post-op. No, I don't want to take the chance of ruining what I've gone through by taking this test, because I have to lift 65 pounds and do all kinds of things. Okay, and now as of July 19th, I no longer have a job.
So, I'm sorry, have they terminated you, or they just say you can't come back to work until you pass it and you haven't passed
it? Well, see, that's where I'm kind of foggy on. They told me I could apply for other positions within the company. Okay, well, I can, but to get those other positions, I have to pass the same physical test.
Okay. Yeah. And you did not get injured in the workplace, correct?
No, it was not. Well, it didn't help my injury, but no, it was something that needed to be done.
Okay.
When I started there 7 years ago, I had to take the test, and I passed. Struggled, but I passed. And now, even before my shoulder surgery, there would be no way that I could retake that test and pass it.
So
I don't know. I mean, it didn't help it, but I'm sure it didn't. I had shoulder soreness and issues before I started there.
Okay, so Warren, just generally, I can't give you absolute exact advice here because I don't know all the facts, but generally speaking, your employer can fire you if you have an injury or an illness, okay, as long as it's not a disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act, like epilepsy or some chronic life-threatening problem. An injury like you're talking about is not one of those disabilities. So they're free to fire you if you don't meet the qualifications. And in this case, a test like this is perfectly legitimate. They can do that. And they don't have to hold the job open for you. A lot of people think that the employer has some obligation from a legal standpoint to keep that job open until you get better. They don't. And they can let you go or they cannot let you come back because you haven't passed it. That's bad news for you, but I don't know what else you can do to get through that.
Okay, now, by them doing what they're, you know, not allowing me to come to work, would I qualify for unemployment at this time or not?
Yeah, you should be able to. I mean, you can't go back to work, and I think maybe just to confirm it, you have your employer write a note to say you haven't met the expectations here, you haven't met the medical qualifications, and we're terminating your employment, and that basically if you quit, you're not going to be able to get unemployment, but the idea that you can't do your job anymore means that you didn't voluntarily quit your job. But I would get that in writing from them, and then you apply for unemployment, and hopefully you can even talk to them and say, you're not going to contest it, are you? Most employers, won't do it in this situation, but you might want to confirm that, just because you're going to need that, at least for the time being. Okay?
Because I really don't have too many more options with that corporation at this time because of the physicalness of my job. So,
no,
okay, but I need to get it in writing from them then.
Yeah, you should get it in writing to make sure that you get it. Okay, good luck to you,
Warren. All right, thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. When we come back, we're going to be taking more legal calls, 981-7200. Let me give out my number at the office in case you want to talk to me there, 312-332-7800, or email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. We're doing legal questions, but we're sort of like interspersing it with our guest, Victor Cohen. But I do want to give out the numbers again. We have open phone lines. You're going to talk to Ben, the producer, and ask a legal question that you might have. The number is 312-981-7200, or you can text to that same number. Victor Cohen is a comedy writer. He's a producer. He's an actor. He's really worn many, many hats. A couple of just questions here. I'm very interested in this whole idea of political correctness in comedy, and I've spoken with Tommy Dreesen about it. I've spoken with Brian Noonan about it, and the idea being that we are now in a world where saying things might be offensive to people, and it used to be that That's what comedians did. They were offensive, you know, and that was funny. That could be funny. For instance, the Roseanne Barr situation. She says something on Twitter and she gets fired from her job. Where are we on this issue? Where is comedy just not going to be offensive anymore?
Well, it's confusing time, you know, right now. I'm confused by it. You know, I think that sometimes political correctness can be used as an excuse to get rid of people too. Like going back to Billy Bush, you know, like that whole thing.
Tell us what happened to him.
Well, you know,
in case we don't know.
So it was during the election, presidential elections period, and someone at NBC, I believe it was NBC, released a tape that was of Billy Bush and Donald Trump in a trailer, and Donald Trump said some kind of vulgar stuff, to put it mildly, and Billy Bush laughed and kind of egged Donald Trump on. And so Donald Trump ended up getting elected, and Billy Bush ended up getting his career pretty much destroyed, blown up. And so I think this is what I think happened in that situation. And I'm just going off of a gut, so I have no proof of this. People at NBC might have just wanted him gone. And what a great way to get rid of him than to say it was so offensive. I mean, what did the guy really do? I mean, that's his job. They weren't rolling tape, like they weren't going to use that on air with that conversation. I mean, as a host, as Billy Bush being the host in a way out, you know, doing this report, he has to be somewhat conciliatory. He can't say or I don't know if that's the right word, but he can't bash Donald Trump and say, how dare you speak like that? I mean, Donald Trump would have left and Billy Bush wouldn't have done his job.
Might it have been a nervous laugh?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm not saying like what
but
it
that's
was.
That's such an extreme example of someone's career being destroyed by just laughing at someone's not so funny
comments.
That's
why I think that sometimes these people are being fired for bigger reasons. Just because we don't know them doesn't mean they don't exist. It's such an easy hook to get someone out. And there have been rumors that that he was not the easiest guy to work with. I don't know. I mean, these are just rumors.
Sure.
Who knows?
Right.
I worked with him on a show and I thought he was a nice guy, but you know, who knows?
So when you're writing comedy or when you're getting ready to do a stand-up act, I mean, do you have to now consider that there's going to be people that are going to be offended? Like, for instance, the issue of Donald Trump. I mean, when Jerry and I traveled, we made a pact that we're not going to talk about it with other people. We're going on this trip with people from around the world. We're going to be in different countries around the world. And that's not something you want to get into a conversation about. It's just not something that, because we're all so sensitive about that we're polarized.
Oh, sure.
We're so polarized. We can't even say anything without someone jumping on you.
Can't even say anything with Donald, like Donald Duck. Anything with the word Donald or with the word Trump, or if Trump is part of the word.
You know? To say it's trumped up is a problem.
You can't say that. Yeah. Stop.
So I guess the question is, can you even tell a political joke now? Like, I remember back in the day of Clinton. Now, I happen to be a Clinton fan. I liked Bill Clinton. But I laughed my you-know-what off when I heard the jokes about him. And they were all funny. They were about
the
Lewinsky jokes and all that. I mean, those were all just...
Well, you hit on something really important, I think. The difference. People really liked Bill Clinton in the Hollywood scene. Okay, so when they would make jokes about Bill Clinton, they weren't really trying to destroy Clinton. They didn't hate Clinton. They were kind of having fun with Clinton at his expense. It wasn't coming from a place of full-blown destruction.
Right.
And so what's happening now, I believe, is that late night in particular, there's just a general dislike of Trump. I mean, it's not a secret. You can just flip through the dial. You'll see. So for me, I personally, it's not my brand. I don't really want to do political stuff because I don't want to alienate half the people.
Exactly.
And I kind of feel like, you know, he's our president. And if people are unhappy with it, then go find someone else if you're unhappy and vote for someone else. To me, this is democracy, you know, and this is what. So I think when people watch late night TV, most people, I'll speak for me. I don't want to hear about Trump anymore. Like, I just, or all this divisiveness. I just want to kind of have a laugh. Right. You know, and it's hard to find that because everywhere I'll turn at night, it's another person, and it's in the language and the tone. It's very, it's very mean-spirited.
It's mean-spirited, yeah. And I made a pact with myself when I was given this show that, and I've done this on radio for a long time. I obviously have very strong political opinions about things, but my job is, I'm not a political commentator. I'm not going to tell people how to think. I think it's bad enough that we have to turn on one station and hear one side of a story and another station and hear a completely different side of the story, and people don't even know what's the truth anymore because it's all being spun for us. And I don't presume to know more than anybody else. You have a different opinion, that's fine. My job here is to explain things. And if there's an indictment or if there's a political case coming down, I will explain the case, but I don't want to throw my two cents in to say, well, that's the way it should be.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah.
And you're a smart businesswoman, too. I mean, you're an attorney. You don't want to just represent people who like your political view. That's not the point.
No.
You know? And I think being a chameleon and not really knowing what your political viewpoint is smart.
So let's take this aside from the whole Donald Trump presidential issue. Let's just go into regular comedy. I've read that the millennial group of people are very sensitive to politically incorrect things, and that the colleges who are big, they hire comedians to come and do acts, and the comedians are being told not to do certain things that might offend the millennials and get into their safe space. and is this true? Is this something that people are just really fearful of, and is this going to impact comedy on a long-term basis?
Well, I hope not, because the stage really needs to be a free place for expression. And there are certain comics, you know what you're going to get, so don't hire them. If you're concerned, there are certain people who are known for being offensive, and you can't tell those people to suddenly stop. Bill Maher is Bill Maher. He's great at being Bill Maher. If you're going to hire Bill Maher, you're getting Bill Maher. And so I think that the problem is when you're not a Bill Maher, when you're someone who they don't really know,
The other thing is that I've had this conversation with Tommy Dreesen and some of the other comedians is that, I remember Don Rickles. He was so funny. He was so, he would be insulting. He would be racist. But there was something about him that you just knew he was kidding about it. He was making fun of himself. He was making fun of his own prejudices in a way that was totally acceptable and totally likable.
Well, Don Rickles and Joan Rivers in particular, both of them, in my opinion, these were nice people. It was shtick. It was an act. They were vulnerable, and that you could tell they were sensitive human beings. And the challenge sometimes I find with some of the comedians today is that I'm not sure about what's underneath that. Is this a really, truly, wonderfully, just kind human being who's kind of doing an act? Because sometimes it gets so, it just feels so personal.
Right.
It's almost like who can scream the loudest in a theater? And I'm not sure if that's really going to work for the long term. It doesn't work for me really that much.
We're talking to Victor Cohen, actor and writer and comedy writer. Again, we're taking legal calls in the last segment. This is your last chance. 312-981-7200. You're listening to WGN. Back. We're here talking to Victor Cohen about comedy and acting and all these good things. And we have Tom on the line who wants to make a comment. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hi. I came in. I just turned the program on about, 5-10 minutes ago. So as far as the legal question, I wasn't really getting, I just was making a comment with the your screener that, back in the day, I've heard, Red Fox, and I heard Don Rickles.
Yep.
And like the guy who was you were talking to said, a lot of it was good humored and and it did get racial, but it wasn't biting racial. It was more making a joke, and he made fun of himself too because he was from the Jewish faith. So
absolutely.
So as far as
I think that's
as far as
go ahead.
Yeah, as far as the legal question goes. Are comedians now, are they more afraid of getting sued or getting blackballed? you know, because of all the political correctness and the sensitivity of the millennials. I don't know if that.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it. Tom, I'm going to put you on hold because I got a little wind coming from you on that one. I think he makes a good point, the point that we were making, that there was some self-effacing part of the comedy, that even the Archie Bunker was hysterical because he was a caricature of someone of his type making the comments that he made, which were obviously very inappropriate. But his question about are the millennials going to dictate the fact that we're not going to now have any biting comedy? And then we're not even just talking about politics. We're talking about sex. We're talking about everything that might be offensive to people.
Well, first of all, I have to remind you that, I mean, not just. You know, the way millennials are, generally they're texting. I mean, they're not really going to comedy clubs. They're usually somewhere in a corner texting each other. So, you know, it's the people who are going to clubs, I think, are more, you know, are older and so that's my little take on millennials. I've noticed a lot of texting. That's where they would complain. They probably text you on stage. They wouldn't boo you. They would text you.
They would text you.
Yeah, you get heckled via text.
Well, I got a text, speaking of mean text. Well, the people, you know, I find that people on the phone are really nice, but people in text, they say, oh.
Oh, my God, I was broken up with by text.
Someone said, why doesn't Karen have a sense of humor? You know, there's been so many people who have said horrible things about me, but no one has ever said that I didn't have a sense of humor.
You have a great sense of humor.
No one has ever said that to me, except on this text.
That's the other thing about, like, Yelp, okay?
Right.
Like, people drop Yelp bombs. Like, to me, I have a rule. Generally, I have broken this rule, I'll be honest. But generally speaking, if you did a great job, I want to give you 5 stars on Yelp, okay? If you didn't, if there was a problem, I want to talk to you personally.
Yeah.
These people hide out. And this is a great legal issue, too, because, you know, some of these people are getting sued when they give a Yelp a 1 star.
Sure.
I did. Actually, it's really funny. I was here visiting once when I was back living in Los Angeles. I went to this restaurant and, you know, I like writing funny stuff. And the place, I'm not going to say which place it was because I'm actually scared by these people. They contacted me. It was supposedly not the owner. I don't know. It sounded like a mob guy. I swear. He was so furious. He goes, you got to drop that. You got to drop that Yelp review on our restaurant. And I'm like, well, you know, why? He goes, you know, we work really. Yeah, I don't know. He was giving me a hard time because what I wrote was I said, this place is so unhealthy that the only way you should eat here is if you've been sentenced to death. And this is your last meal because you will die. There was nothing on the menu that was healthy.
What were you thinking about?
I thought it was kind of funny.
Oh, but, like, you know, healthy as far as
like
not,
healthy,
not
like,
sanitary.
No, it was all like
deep fried,
very
food
rich and deep fried.
It's sort of like eating in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to. Hey, you can disparage the entire. We love Wisconsin.
No,
we love Wisconsin.
I love Wisconsin. I have a house there.
Yeah.
But
no,
I'm
no,
telling
no.
you, if you're a healthy eater,
well, cheese is this thing. Yeah.
It is a challenge to get anything that's not breaded, deep fried with cream and butter on it.
Okay.
I'm serious.
I haven't been in Wisconsin in a while. I'll have to go. You're making me hungry. Yeah. But, yeah, so.
Yeah. Well, let's go to that Yelp thing. It's just a little legal advice because people ask me this question all the time.
Well, can I tell you, after that, I did remove it because I'm not going to get sued over some restaurant. And you know what I realized? I was wrong. Because you know what? If I want to eat healthy, go to a vegetarian place or go somewhere else. Why am I writing? You know, this is a guy's livelihood. And I've never did that again because I realized this means their whole life.
It's true.
So I removed but go on. So yeah, legally.
From a legal standpoint, the law is defamation. And the law of defamation is the same if you write it in a newspaper, if you say it on the radio, or if you put it on a Yelp review. So the bottom line is if you are saying things that are false, it has to be a fact. It can't be, I didn't like it, it wasn't that good. That would be deemed to be an opinion. So you couldn't ever be sued on that. But if you did say, I found a rat in my meal, and you didn't, and that was false, and that was defamatory because it harmed their reputation, which it would, and you published it, which means you put it online, you could be sued, and you could be assess damages for whatever the jury decided to give you. So I would always say, why are you spending time and energy doing this unless unless it's something that you feel so strongly about that you need to prevent the world from going to that place, do you want to be sued? Do you want to put yourself in that situation?
You know what? God, when people die, if you believe in God, God will review. God will look over your Yelp reviews. And God would say, what you wrote about X hardware store was very wrong. And you are going to hell. I mean, like, how I conduct myself when people don't know. Like, that's, you know, it's just so weak. It's like not a good character, a sign of character to like hide out and, you know, drop these bombs on these businesses. Be a man, be a woman, talk to the people there when it's happening.
And I guess how I feel, and whenever I have a problem somewhere, I usually do. I'll either email them directly. I don't do that Yelp thing, but I mean, or I talk to them directly, and I say, "Listen, I'm an employer. I've run my business for many, many years. I expect good things. I spend a lot of time and energy making sure I have a good reputation, and I hire people that. But your people fell down on this, and I just want to tell you that. And a lot of times they'll say, "Oh, I'll give you free this." I'm like, That's not what I want. I'm not one of those people. Give me a free gift certificate and I'm happy.
Oh, I'll take it.
No, okay. Maybe we'll have a business. I'll get the free gift certificate and I'll give them to you.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's just like, no, that's not my point. And I know a lot of people are pacified by that. And maybe that is a good business decision to offer that to people as sort of to placate them. But I think I just want people to know, because not every business owner can be every place at one time. And I think it's important that they know.
Well, it's better to talk to someone in person. It shows more character than just bashing someone quietly, you know, hiding behind a Yelp thing. It's a real interesting thing, you know, I find.
It really, really, really is. I think there's a lot of anger in this world, don't you think? Don't you feel like there's just anger out there that's just on the surface, just ready to erupt?
Yeah, I need a hug.
Oh, I feel like Jerry's closer to you than I am, so.
Maybe Ben. You know, Ben was eating the mandel bread, my mom's mandel bread. He said it's a thumbs up. He was very, very positive about that mandel bread. Mom, if you're listening, which I know you are. Right?
It's good, huh? It's Ben is good. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Actually, we have a texter who said that do you want to go into business with making this bread with him? He wants me to do the contract to put you guys in business together.
Oh, that's interesting. My mom would be thrilled. It's an old family recipe. It was my father's mother. It's Russian, I think.
Is it
so,
Russian?
Oh. I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So growing up in Chicago, mm-hmm. How did that impact your success out in California?
Well, I think just being trying to just, I don't know, like, you know, how it's about just being real, I think. You know, just my parents are very real. My dad's really hardworking. My mom is, I have great family. And so I was lucky. You know, my parents are still married. They just had their 55th anniversary. And I always thought, you know, what was that thing the syndrome thing you talked about in the top?
The Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, like I wonder sometimes after a certain period of time, is one of the partners, if they're still there, is it Stockholm syndrome? Like they've fallen in love with their hostage taker, you know? Because if you've been married, you know it can sometimes be like that.
Mom, your son really didn't mean that.
No. My parents have an amazing marriage.
If you're tied up right now,
let me know. I don't want to know.
I'll call 911 for you.
And if you're liking it, definitely don't tell me. No, but my parents have had, they have an amazing relationship. And I think that kind of gave me a good grounding. You know, my dad works really hard. My mom was, most of the time, she was a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, I have these really solid two brothers. So probably
Victor,
it's a Midwestern
thing. If your parents
thing.
Were so great, then why aren't you married? Why aren't you?
I have
why
been
aren't
married.
You, why aren't you following their lead and stay married forever?
I guess I'm a little different.
You are?
You know, okay. I think there are a lot of ways to do it. You know, I was married.
Okay.
For 4 years. It was great.
That doesn't count.
Oh, it was like going to college. I learned so much and I had the best party. Seriously. I actually had the party. It was at the Knickerbocker. You know, that floor lights up.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. And we had our honeymoon in that building, Hugh Hefner's. That was his building at one point. I think the Playboy Club was there. So I was literally in Hugh Hefner's room. But it was not as active. I'll just put it that way.
One of my listeners said, I think everyone should be able to get married when they're about 8 years old. Because then when they're 10 and they get divorced, they have to give up all their toys. And then they would understand that getting married is a serious thing. I kind of like that.
You know, I fortunately didn't have that much, so there wasn't a lot to lose. And I don't know, I'm ready for number two.
You're ready for number two. Well,
yeah.
Ladies, you can always contact me at WGN at AskKarenConti.com. Victor Cohen, yes. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you,
Jerry.